Estás escuchando LACNIC Podcast, contribuyendo al desarrollo de Internet en América Latina y el Caribe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next episode of this podcast on Internet governance past, present, and future in Latin America and the Caribbean. My name is Kevin Swift, and I am the Head of Strategic Relations and Integration at LACNIC. In the first episode, we review the main concerns and the context for establishing the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum, the Regional Preparatory Meeting for the Internet Governance Forum, LACIGF, and the Brazilian Internet Governance Forum, from reference persons who were instrumental in establishing these spaces or key observers. In this episode, we will continue our discussion with a review of the achievements made by these spaces. Intersectionality between regional and national internet governance initiatives, and observations on the impact that internet governance dialogue has had on regional digital development. We have with us Mr. Nigel Casimir, the Acting Secretary General of the Caribbean Telecommunications Union, the CTU, Mr. Raul Echeverria, who was instrumental in setting up the LACIGF, and Ms. Raquel Gatto, three-term MAG member and a superb point of reference for internet governance issues in Latin America. Good day to all. So, ladies and gentlemen, how have these processes evolved over the years? And in particular, how would you describe the intersections between these regional processes and national IGF initiatives, the NRIs, the national ones, which would have arisen over the years, starting with the Brazilian IGF? I'd love to hear first from Nigel and Raul in the same capacity that they spoke. As a matter of fact, let's change that for 1 minute. Let's hear again from Raquel. I'd love to hear a bit more from Raquel about that thrust that went behind the rising of NRIs in general, and depending and leveraging a bit her experience with the MAG. Raquel?
Thank you very much again, Kevin. I'm going to take the plane with Nigel and Raul and take us back to the Word Summit on Information Society back in 2003 and 2005, because that's where we lend the ground and set the rules and principles that really holds up together now for what the NIRs are meant and why they are so important. So back to the Tunis Agenda, which was one of the outcomes from the WISIS in 2005. It not only sets the IGF mandate, the rules of the MAG, but also it recognizes that it is key for tackling the internet governance challenges to adopt approaches of bottom-up and multi-stakeholder discussions. But while those global discussions, such as the ones that take place at the IGF, are very important, decisions are really taken locally. And I might be stealing some of the quotes from Raul, but he often says that at the end of the day, it's the governments that are going to take those decisions. So it's really important that the Tunis Agenda recognize the need for the regional and the national processes to happen. And it does need to happen into two-way streets or into retrofeed mode, because at one hand, by having those diverse, those open, those inclusive discussions, you do have better, sound, informed, realistic, effective, you name it, on the adjectives, but for national decisions to really tackle those complex issues that the internet often brings. But once you identify also which are those national priorities, and you can share your ways to find the solutions for that, you also shape better the global discussions. So each country, each region has its particular set of needs, its particular ways to solve those problems, and it's crucial that a global discussion can bring this all together, all those different perspectives, to really make some sound decisions. So it's not by surprise that that it has evolved over time. And we've taken a lot of learning since 2005. The internet and the digital environment is different from what it was. And we all go learning. One example on this evolution, as I like to call, it's a learning curve and it's an evolution. It's also the blossoming of many of the NIRs around 2014 and 2015. And why we have this? First, it's what I like to call the Snowden effect. If you recall, Snowden revelations around the massive and pervasive vigilance that was being done by one of the governments over some of the communications, not only internet per se, but all the communications, has really brought the attention on some of those principles that we hold together. And the way to tackle it, which was involving as many actors as possible. So it was not up to one government to make those decisions, but really you needed a community to dive in the decisions and to hold to those principles that were taking back to the WISIS discussions. So why do I call also the Snowden effect was because it does got a lot of attention through the media, and it did bring to the dinner table the discussions on privacy, on the internet limits and the internet users per se, on its rights. And so this really also helped to many of the countries and many of the communities, the national communities, to organize themselves into this local forum for the dialogue on the internet governance matters. So this is one of them. The second one was also that it puts some pressure for the MAG and for the IGF itself, because in 2015 was precisely the WISIS Plus 10 review and the decision around the renewal of the IGF mandate itself was in the table. And so the IGF got the pressure that it didn't need to show that it produced an impact, that it did had some influence over the policymaking. And so it was pretty interesting to see all those NIRs, all those local initiatives coming to the IGF and showing, as I shown earlier, how those national discussions really turns into influencing and shaping policy decisions. Even if one actor in particular is in charge of making them, all the discussions are important to make it happen in a more effective and in a more sound way. So now, just to be more pragmatic in my answer, also, this all this evolving support to the NIRs has not only taken place in the political space, but it also turned into concrete support that the MAG and the IGF Secretariat as the UN arm, the operative UN arm, to nurture and to develop the IGFs. They are basically tackling five key components to make a successful NIRs. The first one was the recognition of those initiatives, which now you can register beyond the IGF Secretariat. It's a pretty simple form. There is not a particular fitting on the initiative itself, just some formal requirements in terms of who is involved and when it's going to happen, and that you do need to deliver a report. But once you are there, you are formally part and recognized as a national initiative. Also, they've tackled the communications for those NIRs by putting all the organizers and all the interested parties into those national discussions, those that are planning to host their first, those that are there for a long time. There is a mailing list that puts all together, and there are constant calls, sometimes monthly, sometimes more than that, as the IGF approaches. But there is a constant communication and a constant mentoring among the NIR's organizers itself. And there is also a support in capacity building by creating guidelines, by collecting those best practices and sharing with the others, and by providing a dedicated staff to support the NIR's work. And there is also more recently an integrated funding stream. Of course, all these local initiatives, this hits the pocket, and sometimes you do need to have the support. So the IGF Secretariat has, and the MAG has been working on solutions and streams of funding for those national initiatives directly. But most importantly, I save that to the end, is also the impact on the agenda. So the NIRs are being more and more called to be fully part of the IGF, the global IGF agenda. So they have now pretty much standing main session. They do organize themselves collaborative sessions. And they do have self-organized meetings when they can. It's not the case this year, but to meet face-to-face and really foster this network. So it's pretty much important also to think pragmatically that the IGF, the global IGF itself, but also then the national and regional IGFs, are not about one day and one event, but they are all about the process that you create among one and the other. The event, the day that the IGF happens or the day that a national IGF happens, it's really one moment, one milestone of a process that you start creating for all this impact on the policymaking around internet issues. And I think I'm going to get by that. I spoke too much.
No, Raquel, that was wonderful. Thank you, Raquel, for that global perspective on the factors attributed to the rise of the NRIs and national initiatives in particular, and also for the reminders on the WISIS Plus 10 review process and the Snowden effect, especially the Snowden effect. What it meant for national communities discussing IG issues. Nigel, what's your take on the intersections between regional processes and the national IGF initiatives?
Yes, thank you. If I could just also make a comment on some of what Raquel said, or what was said about the Brazilian leadership, I guess, in multi-stakeholderism. From our very first Internet Governance Forum in September 2005, coming out of there, it was recognized that there was a need for establishing a regional internet governance structure and the priorities as well, Caribbean priorities. Those were actually outcomes of our discussion, and we had identified some Caribbean priorities. And realize that, you know, this is not a single forum type of work. This is an ongoing type of process. So this is why we've persisted to up to this year. However, from that very first meeting, it was recognized that one of the things we had to examine was the Brazilian model for multi-stakeholder governance of the internet, which, as was mentioned, had been in existence from the mid-1990s. So this was one of the things that informed some of the Caribbean discussions. And in the subsequent years, in fact, we wrote a report of that first meeting that identified this additional work to be done. And in the subsequent years, as we met, we formulated, or we recorded and we formulated, say, consensus positions that had been developed. Notably, the articulation of a vision for the Caribbean Internet, the Caribbean Information Society, and a mission for Caribbean Internet governance. And we put those, we recorded the consensus and all the ideas in a document we call the Caribbean Internet Governance Policy Framework. So I would say from the outset, we've always sought to create some guidance for our member states and record it. So our discussions and our work, you know, always was leading towards something. I'm happy to see that is tending to be the approach of the global IGF now as well, and possibly even the LAC IGF to create products that would be useful to the members or participants. You're talking about intersections as well, apart from looking at the Brazil model. I mentioned the simulcast between the CIGF and the initial IGF. There was also a co-hosted session of the Caribbean IGF and the LAC IGF. If I remember correctly, I think it was 2011 in Port of Spain, where we had both assemblies attend each other's sessions on consecutive days. So we had our CIGF, which was shortened. The CIGF tends to be anywhere from 1 to 3 days, depending on the circumstance under which it is held. In this case, since it was a co-hosting with the LAC IGF, I think we did the CIGF for 1 day, and then the LAC IGF went for another day or two thereafter. So we usually try to keep our events not more than 3 days, all things considered. So in the subsequent years, as I said, we developed this Internet Governance Policy Framework. It had the mission, the vision and mission statements, and it also had, it also identified the main priority areas, for example, infrastructure development, internet, critical infrastructure, content and legal frameworks and so on. You know, all of these were recorded, or are recorded, I should say, in the policy framework, because it was first issued in 2009, and we've updated it twice since 2013 and 2016, and hopefully we would get one out. It was initially planned to be 2020 for our 4.0, but given COVID-19 and the delays that it has caused, it could possibly go into 2021. But in any case, it's a living document that we evolve and update as the technology and priorities change. So we have that document to guide our work and guide our member states going forward. What I should say is that even the CTU, who convenes the CIGF, has taken up the mantle to push for the implementation of certain policy prescriptions in the policy framework documents. So for example, the things related to capacity building, you know, we might take certain initiatives that would be consistent with some of the proposals in there. And in 2014, we realized, like Raquel said, that, you know, notwithstanding that we're doing this thing at a regional level and coming up with some very good policy proposals, the implementation really is at the national level. And the CTU is an intergovernmental organization. We're not a national government. And we realize that there is need for some follow-up mechanism at the national levels. So we basically took up two main thrusts. One related to fostering the development of national internet governance fora, these multi-stakeholder fora at the national level. And secondly, even at the level of convening the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum, let's make that a little bit more multi-stakeholder involved. Up till about 2014, the CTU convened the forum. We brought all the stakeholders together, and I think we were trusted to do so. But we realized, you know, that we need to push the implementation down at the national level, number one. Number two, involve more stakeholders in the organization. So the involve more stakeholders in the organization led to an idea that we've only partially implemented. That's the creation of something we call a Caribbean Internet Development Foundation, where the stakeholders or the sort of board members of that would be stakeholder representatives from government, from private sector, from civil society, from academia, and so on, to sustain the work of Caribbean Internet governance going forward. As I said, that's only partially implemented so far. The legal entity has been set up, but we are in the process of getting stakeholders to commit to that particular effort. On the other side, where we fostering the development of national IGFs, I'm happy to say that so far we have three in operation: Trinidad and Tobago IGF, Barbados IGF, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines. We've had, I guess it hasn't quite been launched yet. There was also an effort in Belize to get a Belize IGF going. I think there are interested stakeholders, but I don't think they've had an official meeting as yet. But we, meaning the CTU, are seeking to both involve more stakeholders in the governance aspect as well as continuing to foster to create more national IGFs, and we do that in the normal course of our work. So one thing I should say of linkages, the CIGF has, or should I say, it's certainly in the Caribbean, we've participated and I think increased our participation in the global IGF over the years. We've had regional hubs participate in the global IGF. And in the CIGF, we've made space as well for reports or liaisons from each of the national IGFs in the Caribbean, as well as the LAC IGF and the global IGF. So one session of our CIGF today is those liaison statements and so on, which help us to compare notes between what we're doing and what is going on at the other levels. I'll stop there for now.
Thank you tremendously, Nigel. And thank you especially for that synopsis of the Caribbean IGF policy framework. I think our listeners will really appreciate that. And the Caribbean Internet Governance Foundation, which is expected to really streamline cooperation and liaison with other spaces and make internet governance a greater priority on national agenda, correct? Wonderful. Raoul, you were mentioning this earlier, the evolution of the LAC IGF space. So we can say that LAC IGF has evolved from a preparatory space for the global IGF to a more self-inspired and self-serving discursive space within Latin America and the Caribbean. These transformations, we could probably say, were always fit for purpose. Why is there now a need for a LAC IGF version 2? And what do you think we can expect from that compared to LAC IGF as it's currently configured?
Well, thank you, Kevin, for the question. I think by answering this question, I will also comment on the previous question about the national IGFs. The global IG ecosystem has been evolving permanently. At the beginning, I think now looking into the the those discussions of 15 years ago, I guess that probably the objectives that we were trying to achieve at the time were, first of all, to develop the idea that the digital policies should be discussed among all stakeholders, that it would be impossible to have successful policies in place without the participation of all the different perspectives. That internet has made very clear to us that the wisdom and experience is highly distributed. And so due to the rapid evolution of all the context, we cannot rely on a single stakeholder to have all the expertise and the knowledge about everything. Even if that stakeholder is the government, that it's impossible to expect, it's too much for a single stakeholder that we tell them, you should know about everything and you should be prepared to take the sound decisions and the most intelligent decisions at any time about an issue. So we cannot waste talents. We need all the talents and we need all the perspectives in this discussion. So that's what we were building. It was a place to meet everybody, to have common discussions in equal footing, to develop this new multi-stakeholder idea, culture, but also to have a one-stop shopping in policy, right? So for small companies or developing countries, it was very useful at that time to go to IGF to know more or less about everything that was discussed in the world on those issues. So when you came back from the global meeting, you could tell your colleagues or your bosses, okay, this is what's happening in the world. Those are different policy options. And this is what we can expect from the near future. Yeah. But the same happened in the regional level. As you pointed out at the beginning, we started to organize the LAC IGF as a kind of preparatory meeting to have more people engaged in the discussion, to participate more meaningfully in the global IGF. So it was a kind of participation, but during the first few years, it was very clear that we needed something like the LAC IGF in the region to discuss the regional issues. And so I think that's that the LAC IGF fulfilled that role very, very well. And that all the stakeholders participated. Gradually, they started to participate. And so, but the same challenges that we face globally are the same challenges that we face regionally. That we need more now, because things are moving on even faster, and there are more challenges and new things are coming up. And some governments, for example, just speaking about one of the stakeholders, but governments sometimes need feel the need to regulate some things because they feel that some things are evolving out of control, but it is impossible to regulate or to take policy decisions in an isolated manner. It doesn't have any effect, or the effect that you produce could be even the opposite that you are looking for. So that could be a very negative. So there is a need for further collaboration. The Secretary General of United Nations has realized that. He had been promoting the discussion globally about what are the new models for digital cooperation, new models that should aim to develop the capacity to build a more egalitarian society, a society where everybody can take advantage of the evolution of the technologies. Those are the challenges that we are facing also in the regional level. We need forums that can produce more tangible outcomes. We don't need only a place for going to have discussions. We need to produce some outcomes that could be useful to be used in other places, in other forums. As we, as Raquel already said, that at the end of the day, most of the policy the development happens at the local level. So the ultimate objective of all the whole ecosystem, the whole internet governance or digital cooperation ecosystem, is that decisions that are taken at the local level are taken in a very informed manner with the participation of all stakeholders and taking in consideration things that are happening in different parts of the world. So we can learn from others' experience, and also we can also influence the decisions that will mark the evolution of the global society. It's time to continue evolving, to change that. It doesn't mean that the mechanism like IGF have not evolved so far. It has been evolving all the time. The formats of the meetings, the kind of participation, the ways that the agendas are built, the many things have been evolving all the time. But there is a need specifically now for further evolution. And so we need to take some risk in producing something new, something that fits better the need of all stakeholders. Involving high-level people and having better connections with other stakeholders, with the government, with other forums. One of the things, so this is what I hope that will be discussed right after the next LAC IGF that will be held next week. So I hope that after that the meeting is over, we can continue discussing what's next, what's the next changes that we have to introduce in LAC IGF. But just for finishing my speech, that one of the important things is that we understand that the ecosystem is absolutely different now. So when the IGF, the global IGF, was created, and happens, you can say the same about the regional IGFs. When the local IGF was created, it was created as the central piece of the IG ecosystem. So all the things, so we were working on how to bring the outcomes of all the other forums, all the other processes, including national and regional IGFs, to the global IGF, like the final step of the process. But it has changed now. There is plenty of different forums that's dealing with specific issues and forums with different characteristics, some of them intergovernmental, some of them multi-stakeholder, some of them led by the private sector or civil society, with group of countries, with regional, with the variety of forums is a mechanism is big. So what we need is to see what's the contribution of each of those forums to the chains of the streams of discussions. We need to understand, speaking about IGF and the regional IGF, we need to understand what are the inputs we need to receive to the discussion, to feed the discussion in the regional, in LAC IGF, speaking about LAC IGF, but also to understand where we should push the outcomes of the LAC IGF. So this is communication in different in different directions. It's and of course the national IGF have a very prominent role, because we need that the decisions that are taken later in the local level in a multi-stakeholder manner, and taking in consideration the inputs coming from all the different forums, the LAC IGF, but also from the other forums that are relevant for the matter that's being discussed at any time.
Thank you, Raul. Thank you. We were addressing the issue of intersections, and I believe I have a firmer grasp, and I assume for our listeners as well. We all have a stronger grasp of the origins of the LAC IGF and the Caribbean IGF, the global trends that were affecting these spaces and how these trends evolved, the achievements of each space, and of course the nuances behind the evolution of these spaces. I truly believe that the nuances and the details really matter in understanding the NRIs within our region. Raul, would you be able to comment on some of the MAG's deliberations surrounding the high-level panel on digital cooperation?
Yes. After many things had happened after the high-level panel on digital cooperation finished its work. There have been a lot of discussions globally, and after several consultations, the UN Secretary General issued his roadmap for digital cooperation. But the roadmap is very concrete in some to some extent, but on the other hand, it doesn't say exactly what should be done. It provides some concepts and general directions. So now we have to discuss the implementation of those recommendations. And some governments that have been tasked by the UN Secretary General are working, also consulting many stakeholders to provide options for the implementation. And we from the IGF community have to jump in on that and say, okay, those are our ideas and they would. Our inputs for those decisions that will be taken before the end of the year by the Secretary General. That will have a big impact in the whole ecosystem. So the MAG and the chair of the MAG and also inviting some other colleagues have been discussing for some of those recommendations. One is the creation of a new body that is called the Multi-Stakeholder High-level body. Other is how to produce more tangible outcomes, and all those discussions will have also effect in the regional at the regional level. Because as I say before in my previous intervention, some of the challenges are exactly the same. So decisions that are taken globally could impact because there could be good lessons to learn and take some ideas from there to apply at the regional level. There is one, with regard to the high-level body, this is a new body that will be created. So there are two options. That is a new body is created, high-level body that is created outside of the IGF. And so probably it will weaken the IGF and all what we have built along all those years. And the other option is to integrate this new body fully to the existing mechanism and structure of the IGF. I'm more aligned to the second view. And we have elaborated within the IGF community, we have worked in working groups with other volunteers to provide some options to implement that specific recommendation from the Secretary General, based on the report of the high-level panel on digital cooperation, in a way that is not too disruptive, that takes advantage of all the capacity that we have built around IGF. The other challenge is just to mention two that are really important is the how to produce outcomes. There are some ideas that are coming up. That some things will be implemented experimentally this year. This is a very special year because we have not only the challenge to implement in the IGF, some of the recommendations from the Secretary General based, as I said before, on the report of the high-level panel on digital cooperation. But at the same time, we have the other challenge that is to have an IGF that is fully virtual due to the pandemic. So some ideas will be implemented, and I hope that they give us some clue about how to continue improving the way that the IGF works and how we can produce outcomes without implementing strict negotiation mechanisms that would really affect the richness of the discussion in the IGF. If we can do that, I think that we will be implementing some of the recommendations that come from the high-level panel and from the Secretary General. We will be satisfying the expectations of many stakeholders, and we will be in the right track to continue evolving the IGF and preserving the IGF as a very relevant piece of the IT ecosystem, avoiding the creation of other competing bodies just to fulfill the functions that some governments in the world and other stakeholders think that are not being fulfilled at this moment. So it's a challenging time. I'm very optimistic that we will do something interesting for the benefit of everybody.
Thank you very much, Raul. Interesting points on the deliberations of the MAG and the rationale behind convening the high-level panel on digital cooperation. Now, to all of you, candidly, has our region effectively appropriated multi-stakeholder IG approaches, meaning have we effectively used this vehicle to enhance internet development in our countries? Raul, I'd like to hear from you on that point.
Okay, I don't know if I understood exactly your question, Kevin, but if you are asking about the impacts of the multi-stakeholder approach, how good has been in order to speed the development of internet in different countries. I think we have different flavors of that in the world. And that we have the discussion has been very useful because even in countries where there are not multi-stakeholder mechanisms to discuss specific local policies, the stakeholders are influencing the decisions by different ways, and they are integrated in most cases in the global discussions. So we know what is being discussed, what are the policy options. We know how to take part on the discussion. So even indirectly, we are having impact in the policy development, not only in things related to internet development, but different aspects of digital policies. There are countries that have very successful have implemented very successful mechanisms for multi-stakeholder dialogue. Raquel just mentioned before the example of Brazil, where they have built some multi-stakeholder bodies that have clear responsibilities, have roles, and they have formal ways to participate in policy development. This is one example. There are many, but I think that's everybody understand now. There are, of course, if we look to the world and we say, okay, there is a large part of the population of the world who is living in places where their rights are not totally respected, or countries that are not democratic. So that we cannot expect that the internet governance ecosystem solves everything magically. That we have to live with those restrictions. So in some countries, we are very far from implementing participative mechanisms to listen the voice of every stakeholder. But in other countries where the landscape, the context is more favorable, we can see really as good examples of very good successful cases of policy development in multi-stakeholder manner. Security is one of those issues where it's very clear, and I think that even people who is not in favor or not fans of multi-stakeholder the models, they have to recognize that it is impossible to make progresses in fields like security just by one stakeholder. We need to involve the users, we need to involve the software manufacturers, we need to involve the equipment manufacturers and the internet service providers and the government and the law enforcement agencies. So if we just try to fix the things from on a single perspective, it's a total failure. So we have to recognize that there are the there are areas that is truly difficult to make progress. This is very is a very young thing yet. We are talking about things that have started 15 years ago. That's as we have never, those, imagine that in 2005, 15 years ago, less than 15 years ago, that we were discussing about the roles and responsibilities of different stakeholders in the IT ecosystem and how to relate to each other, how to work together. We were discussing about the possibility of building a new thing, like the creating a new thing like the Global IGF. We have really done a lot of things. We have achieved a lot. But this is still a very very young field and is subject to a lot of evolution. This is what the UN Secretary General have seen, and this is why he is pushing for changes, because he sees the relevance of the digital policies, and he sees that it is impossible really to create an impact, the impact that most of us are looking for, as without participative models like what we call the multi-stakeholder models. In some cases, some governments, for example, that they participate in the global arena, but when discussing local policies, they are not equally committed with the multi-stakeholder model. We need them to evolve in that sense, to mature the idea that to understand that the world has changed. 60, 70 years ago, is in democratic countries, we used to vote for our representatives to do everything. We just used to give to the governmental, our representatives, the total power, that's a blank check to represent us, because we didn't have enough information to take to have our opinions on everything. And we didn't have the vehicles to express our opinions and influence the decisions. We have all those things now. So we have all the elements to take decisions, to build our own opinions. And also there are vehicles, the technology provides us tools to participate in a meaningful way. So they have to understand that the world has changed. And now the citizens are claiming to have the possibility to have their voices in the discussions. So this is a process. This is still a young process, and I'm very optimistic that we will continue making progress on that. Of course, this is not something that is that is free of obstacles and barriers, but this is the history of the humankind.
Thank you very much, Raul. And as you've mentioned, there are really different flavors of multi-stakeholder practice. Whereas we do have disparate levels of digital development across the region, in general, we do see that increase in the participation in global policy setting or global policy shaping. And your last point there, it's really incumbent on governments to enhance their participation as well in these spaces. And we can see more holistic development on digital matters in general. Raquel, do you share that same view?
Yes, Kevin. And I do believe your question is really interesting, because first, it's not a yes or no easy answer. And as a lawyer, I always tend to reply, it depends. But I think on one hand, and similarly to what Raul mentioned, we've come a long way in terms of developing those multi-stakeholder IG processes in the region. Not only with the national forums, but also in really this dialogue, those spaces, in creating this culture of different perspectives coming to the table, to have a more open discussion about the challenges and what each of the actors can do about it. So it's really an achievement in that sense. We've seen some taking the place like Brazil that already had the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee, and then opening up for a forum dialogue. We had others that did start with a single issue or a single process, and then saw the need and the possibility to create a more steady mechanisms to promote those dialogues. And that really goes beyond the internet itself. As we were mentioning, most of our countries in the region do face the democratic processes as a pretty recent thing. We are all learning in this space on how to promote a better inclusion of the citizens in those dialogues. But on the other hand, and that's the piece why it depends, I think we do tend to assume this whole approach is granted. And this is not for granted. The internet's not for granted. And the multi-stakeholder process is not for granted. I like what Rose said in terms of this is not a magical solution, and it's not. And in fact, the way that even the internet comes together, it brings pretty clearly there is no size, no one solutions fits all. It's really about the collaboration. It's about the networks coming together into this network of networks. And of course, that the same way it reflects on its governance ecosystem, where you do need all the players to come together and to connect on those. And I do think that there is a longer term battle that we do need to recall ourselves about why this is important, and why we need to continue to, well, in a certain sense, fight for this collaboration to continue. It's pretty easy to go with some of the more traditional, speaking in the international environment, in the international law, to go into a more multilateral approach or to a more top-down approach into finding a short-term solution. But if you do need, and that's what the IGF and many of those processes, local and regional processes, have proven, is that if you do need, if you do want to achieve solid solutions, it's a hard work that pays for itself. And that's perhaps a message we need to streamline more in the region. And finally, I think it's appropriate to mention, I don't know when our listeners are going to pop into this podcast, but if ever, I don't think the pandemic is going to fall away from our memories shortly. But it did show us, beyond the internet, the importance of this collaboration and the importance of humanity, that we are not isolated from an impact. And by empowering not only the people, you are empowering a society by itself. So I do think it's a change we are going to see in the world. And all those processes that we've been building with the internet governance are simply going to show up even more as a way to do things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Raquel. And thank you, Raquel and Raul. I think you have both given us reminders that internet governance has achieved a lot in its relatively short space of time. We have achieved a lot in terms of getting stakeholders around the table where they wouldn't have been previously allowed. Nigel, I would like to ask you that same question and ask if there are any particularities for the Caribbean in terms of multi-stakeholder practice and internet development.
Thank you, Kevon. Actually, I don't know if there's a lot more I can add to what has already been said, but certainly the internet governance and the multi-stakeholderism, it's a kind of a journey that we're on. You know, we've brought it from one place in 2005 where people didn't even know what internet governance was, to today, where the theme of our Caribbean Internet Governance Forum was accelerating digital transformation, internet governance matters. You know, I think really our biggest achievement has been in the awareness and capacity building aspect of it. Internet governance means something to a lot more people now than when we started. People understand the aspects of it, people understand the impact of it. I won't say our forum and the work of our forum could take credit for all that. I mean, technology has advanced, services have come on stream and so on. So it has been more in your face than say 15 years ago. But having said that, I think if you look at the internet governance space and in the governance fora today, there is significant participation from persons in the Caribbean, from the Caribbean area, and contributions apart from just participation. We've had people from the Caribbean in leadership roles, although, as I've mentioned, from 2005, we found two persons that we could have brought to address our initial forum, our initial net governance forum. But I think guided by the policy proposals and prescriptions in the internet governance policy framework that we developed, certainly CTU has pushed for implementation of many aspects of that. And I think that has manifested itself in the additional capacity that we've generated in the Caribbean, and the work goes on. That's why I say, you know, it's a journey that we are on. Some of the things I didn't mention before in terms of development of critical infrastructure in the Caribbean. We are still working to, well, we've been able to get a significant number of internet exchange points created in the Caribbean, and we are still working to enhance the value of those and the traffic in those points to strengthen the internet infrastructure and the resilience of the infrastructure in the Caribbean. And people are learning more and more about that. Another aspect, I think we can't claim to be unique in the Caribbean, but I think generally, as far as internet governance is concerned, is the youth involvement. Right. The youth are a significant cohort in the users of the internet and all the digital technology. And there are spaces in practically every internet governance forum you go to now for a youth forum. Sometimes they convene specific IGFs for youth only. Right. And I think all of that is helping to build the awareness, and I think it augurs well for the future order and management of the whole digital space. We have challenges, as we will always do, with things like security and privacy and all these sorts of things. And I think as people become more aware and understanding of what the technology brings and its dangers and so on, through fora like these, I think we can look forward to a future where the benefits would outweigh the drawbacks as far as the technology is concerned. So we in the Caribbean continue to use the fora to build awareness for more resilient infrastructure, for example, to build the digital economy in our region, and certainly in the post-COVID world, where everyone now, I don't want to say suddenly, but it certainly brought home the value of the digital technology to continue with education, business, life in general. You know, I think the value of internet governance will be more prominent, and we'll continue our work to progress in the most meaningful way. Thank you.
Thank you tremendously, Nigel. And as you're saying, yes, internet governance is definitely coming more to the forefront as the world navigates itself throughout this global pandemic. And we see digitization at an accelerated pace. We see more and more how digital issues are interlinked with other policy areas. Internet governance certainly matters. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the end of our podcast for today, Internet Governance Past, Present, and Future in Latin America and the Caribbean. I'd like to thank you very much for listening to our podcast here. Goodbye.